Jotunheim, the heart of the network of the gods, miles of bone, sinew, and synapse. It's time to tear it all down. Ragnarok is coming, and it's you.
Well, here we are for the second session of Iron Nether Reforged. If you listen to the last session, we had a lot of discussion at the end about some of the changes we might like to see, some of the mechanical stuff, some directions this game could go in, and I have implemented a bunch of those changes. So, to give just a quick rundown for both my lovely players and for anyone listening at home, the game is going to focus a lot more on the broad community and surroundings, all the people who are affected by the action of taking down a god. To wit, when you make an NPC, it's the same as making a character, right? From a very basic principle. You're going to come up with three details in this new version. Those details actually get die pool ratings on them, so you will be rolling a number of dice equal to the rating on the detail. And you can flesh things out more than that. You can give them gear and assign them a warrior clan where you actually get special abilities and so forth. But the idea then is that you can start a campaign with your spotlight characters, right? The characters you make from the start. And then if you meet an NPC or a set of NPCs that you have detailed and you're like, oh shit, these people are really cool, I want to know what is going to happen with them, then as a group, you can decide to switch the spotlight and embody and focus on new characters, which is a really neat way to do it. Now, the guidelines for how to do that switch, I don't know yet. Don't have anything for that. You know, because you have to make sure the whole group is on the same page. You want to make sure that everyone's like, yeah, let's tell the story from this perspective. So that's all up in the air, but we're going to kick this off with the changing of the characters, because we made some characters in session zero, and now we are going to adapt them to the new stuff. So, who would like to go first in terms of switching stuff over? B is saying no. B is shaking their head. It's an audio medium, so I have to narrate what's going on.
Thank you.
I can dive in. I can take us first.
Cool. So you've got three details. You know, same as we give every character, same as we gave to the two we detailed last time. I'm not entirely certain these may switch every session, or the guidance might not even be that firm. It may just be if you feel like a detail has changed, go ahead and change it, right? Like, I don't want to necessarily be so prescriptive with this, because if someone's really all about trying to min-max their character and make a really broad detail that means they can use all 10 of their dice in as many situations as possible, fine. I'm not going to design the game to mitigate edge cases.
Yeah, sure. I think that makes total sense.
That's not fun. So, what do you want to put down for your details there for Ronnie, Captain Kurt?
So, for the first detail for Ronnie, thinking about the last session, I'm going to write it as a quote, and I'll write it as, "This fell off a truck." Ronnie is a smuggler. They make things appear. She's very good at stealing things. And so I feel like that to me was the most important thing that he does. And like the most important part of like how he assists the effort and the cause. And so that was kind of the thing that jumped out to me most specifically, was that sort of like smuggler thief mentality, specifically through that lens of smuggling. So I'm going to put that down as my excellent detail of, and I think that kind of sums it up nicely as like a tight phrase in terms of summing that all up of like, this fell off of a truck.
Yeah. And so to keep in mind, these are the things you're going to be using when you're taking actions.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be rolling the dice related to them. So there are things that are obviously related to the idea of something having fallen off of a truck.
Yeah.
Because it's in quotes. I mean, if we need to pull back the curtain for those who may not know the idiom, it didn't really fall off the truck. Ronnie stole it. So as long as you have a reasonable justification for why that detail about your character covers the situation, you get to roll 10 dice.
Mm. Yeah, that makes total sense.
Cool.
The other thing that jumped out to me is really important about Ronnie last session that I think I want to be my good detail is that idea that the thing that the detail we kind of threw in of Ronnie, that she was like living in all of the little like safe houses that we had set up throughout the city. And so I kind of want the idea. I'm going to write down like anywhere can be home for a little while.
The revolution's most notable Airbnb super guest.
So I'm going to write down anywhere can be home for a little while with the idea that Ronnie is spectacularly good at kind of tactically speaking, like blending into places, but also in sort of a more empathetic kind of way. Like they feel at home wherever they go, right? Like it is very easy for them to feel comfortable in a given space. And thus, you know, when it comes to sneaking around and doing stealthy things, like that has the advantage of like, I'm going to look like I belong. But also there are going to be times where that just might come up in terms of I want to feel like I want to, you know, feeling comfortable and being able to open up to somebody and being able to make somebody else feel comfortable is oftentimes really important that you feel comfortable yourself in that space.
Very good. I like that. And what are you thinking for your fair detail?
So the other thing about Ronnie that was really important to me was that they by all rights look like a disaster, right? That they by all rights, like like I described them as having the bandana that was holding back their hair, like their flowing hair, and you know, like they had that energy of like having just rolled out of bed. But that idea that like that was kind of a consciously put on thing, I think the detail I said was like at first glance it looks very shabby and it looks like they rolled out of bed, but if you look at them closely enough it's very obvious that they very intentionally put their outfit together so that it looks like that. So I wrote down as a detail disaster in quotes is only skin deep, with the idea that I think it's partially that they are good at making them look unthreatening and looking and acting like that disaster, but also in the sense of they're very good at making people think that they are nothing but a complete mess, so that when they are really competent, like they can slip under the radar.
Nice. Cool. I think those are excellent details for Ronnie, and I'm interested to see how they're going to play out when you need to like roll dice using them.
Yeah, I'm really interested.
Cool. So the other two of you, I've seen some typing going on. Who would like to expound?
I'm still stuck on one. I can go next. That's fine.
Thanks.
What do you have for Idis Folk?
Yeah, so I think the first thing that I really wanted to settle on as like the excellent detail, and this might be a little broad, but I'm not a power gamer, so I'm probably never going to use it. Which is just, I know what you need before you know you need it. I think that that's, to me, kind of the essence of this character. This person who is both, like, extremely observant and extremely emotionally intelligent and kind of operates on that sort of intuition of paying more attention to the people around me and the way that they are responding to the scenario than to, like, my role in it as an active participant.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of, I think, the most defining characteristic about this person, kind of the ability to read that situation a step out in advance and to be able to create advantages for other people.
That's very good.
Yeah, for my good detail, I wrote a stranger's just a comrade I haven't met.
Very good.
I love it.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that kind of like, for me, it helps to have a guiding principle of like how I interact with new characters when I meet them. And I think that, you know, having something that kind of helps keep me on that track and like kind of keep that consistency, but also, I don't know, maybe that's like the narrative equivalent of a charm roll. You know, it's like, I think that I'm the kind of person who is always going to be looking to find the angle to bring somebody into our side, into our pack, as it were. And then I'm still kind of trying to nail down what I want this last detail to be. I haven't really settled on one yet. So I don't know. I mean, it looks like B has an incredibly good last detail. I would love to get to that moment.
Very good.
But I'm still sort of tossing mine around in my brain space.
All right. Yeah. Let's put a pin in Idis real quick and come over to Aki. Aki, what have you got there for your details?
Yeah. So starting from the top down, I have for my excellent detail makes the best worst decisions. So, like, my idea of Aki is that they're very idealistic, kind of a go-getter, a little angsty, but they always want to do the best, and they're just really good at doing the worst, like, exceptionally good at doing the worst. They don't have very good friends, because they make connections with those that are often in more trouble than they are. So, the way she handles herself is chaotic at best. And then if we move down to the good detail, I'll never travel alone. And this one really speaks to the fact that he is bone bonded. And it also kind of speaks to the friend loyalty that she possesses mm-hmm. with her companions, never traveling alone in the sense that, like, they're always going to try and be there for the people that are around them. And then last but not least, for the fair detail, Daddy Longlegs. So this one really, really speaks to her fashion. I have an entire sticky note on my wall that was just detailing what she was wearing. And I've got long dreadlocks with gems that clack as she walks, leather pants with slits on the side, thigh-high combat boots with studs all around. You know, there's something like long, long legs, and he is very strong. Really good at fighting, really good at acrobatics, really good at the physical stuff. So I feel like really appealing to her legs is just what felt right. And Daddy Longlegs was what came out of that.
Wonderful. I love all of that. Alex.
Oh, so I went ahead and added my fair detail as, yeah, I can make that work.
Nice.
Which I think is fairly self-explanatory.
Yeah, that I think that as we go through this, I mean, like with aspects and fate, sometimes they're really self-explanatory, just like that. Like, yeah, you totally get just from context what that means. But some of them will be a little bit more esoteric. They'll need a little bit more explanation. They're much more like tailored to the character as a person, like Disaster is only skin deep. So I'm excited to see how those are all going to function. We will fill out your gear sort of mid-scene as we're doing the little intro to go meet Burnt Umber, which is where we're going to pick up the session. But you all also have some abilities. That has all changed as well. So every warrior clan now has three paths they can take. If you've ever played video games with skill trees, right, it's sort of the similar idea. And I have lifted some tech from D&D 4th edition, and your abilities fall into three categories. There are at-need abilities, because I have to use different terminology than 4th edition, because trade dress is protected by copyright.
Huh.
Yeah, mechanics are not, but I can't use the same words. Right, so I can't call these at-will abilities because that's a D&D 4th edition thing. They are, however, at need. So, For example, I'm looking at the Bone Bonded, and right now, because we're still in Alpha, I only have one way and one power for each thing specced out. So you're all going to get a little pigeonholed. You're going to lose a little bit of what you had before, but you're going to gain something else. So, B, go ahead and read from the Way of the Network under Bone Bonded and then read off your abilities so you know what you're going to be able to do.
The gods didn't just take the bodies and bones of the giants for their networks. They also took the giant spirits and harnessed them. Vast chained intelligences, the giants are the backbone of the network in all the ways that matter. But not all of them stay chained. Humanity, in its effort to overthrow the gods, has found a way to ally with the rogue giants in the system. These bone-bonded are walking, live connections to the network. The giants navigate the human host as easily as the human navigates the network. The symbiotic relationship is a strange and powerful dynamic. In addition to your character's detail, you also decide the details for the giant to which you are bonded. You need to choose the giant's name and define three details about them. Unlike most details in Iron Edda Reforged, these details are more or less permanent. Being dead has locked certain aspects of the giant firmly in place. It would take an immense event to change the dead giant's basic nature. Having the spirit of a dead giant living in your head is no trivial matter. As such, when you roll the glitch dice, the narrator consults a special table just for you and your giant. The Boned Bonded's paths are Way of the Network, Way of the Bone, and Way of the Ancient.
So you have the Way of the Network. This is the only one that is written as of right now.
Okay.
So the network is pervasive in the world. Everywhere the remains of giants have been used by the gods to expand and grow. Some giants, dismissing the ways of old, have embraced this new reality and have begun to plumb the depths of the technology they inhabit. Those who follow the way of the network focus on breaking the systems of the gods and bending them to their will. So you have one at-need ability, one scene ability, and one session ability. Your at-need ability is one you had before, Ancient Flex. When you roll to do something with the network, you take two of your die pool and set them to successes before you roll. And you say how your giants ensure those successes.
Very cool.
You have Glitch in the Network for your scene ability. Once per scene, you can bring the weight of your giant to bear Oh, that is the wrong ability. That is, that's ancient something or other. That's, anyway, that's what you have for now. Glitch in the network has an ability I need to write yet, because we're still in alpha. And then, rather than summon the bones, I renamed it. It is summon the living network. So you are literally pulling, like, neon lights and panels and whatnot to assemble a giant-like form. Whoa. But from the networked componentry around.
Whoa.
You.
Whoa.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's metal.
And bone. If you can't pun about your game, whose game can you pun about?
Frankly, why else are we writing games?
If you can't show up to pun for yourself, you can't expect anybody else to pun for you, too. That's the other thing.
If you can't pun yourself, how can you pun anybody else? Anyway, so those are your abilities and what you can do. Just keep them in mind. They're attached to your die rolls, right? Or they're just things that happen. So,
okay.
At need, once per scene, once per session. Jeff, since Snake is just next in alphabetical order, would you go ahead and read The Way of the Shadow so people can know what your abilities are?
Yes, indeed. So my abilities are, my at-need ability is Lights Out. Whenever you are in a brightly lit area, you can use an action to take out some of the lighting in the space, declare a detail that reveals the newly shadowed area. My scene's ability is Slither. Once per scene, when you would otherwise fail a stealth roll or succeed at a cost, you may instead re-roll your misses without spending a control point. And my session ability is Undercover. Once per session, you can get your entire group undetected through a security system of difficulty 3 or lower.
Dang, that's useful as heck.
Definitely.
It's cool as hell. That's cool as hell.
Awesome. And then Wolf, I forgot to say which way this is. This is the Way of the Pack that you have, Alex. If you go ahead and read your abilities.
Sweet. So, yeah. So I did just notice two of these actually are the exact same text.
Great. I did the same thing.
That's okay. But my first one is my at-need ability, Togetherness. Once per scene, when one of your allies takes an action, they take two of their die pool and set them to successes before they roll. Say how your efforts ensured those successes. My next ability is the exact same thing, but with a different title.
So your, I just forgot to copy the text over. I actually have it written, and there is the text for you.
Great. Okay. So Togetherness, my at-need ability, is actually, at any time while you are within sight or communication range of an ally, they get an extra die in their pool anytime they take an action.
Yeah. You're just that useful because you're around.
I love that for me.
I thought you would appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you so much. All I ever want to be doing is making things better for people.
This rips.
And then the next one would be the one that I just read. And the last one is Pack Tactics. Once per session, you can call on the personnel and supplies you've been keeping in reserve. For the rest of the scene you are in, every time you spend a control point, it is worth one extra success. When you spend a control point in this way, highlight a detail that relates to the reserves upon which you are calling.
Yeah, so that's the same as one of the abilities you had last time. I did my best just to remap them to these things.
Yeah, I love it.
And then also, let me just check, B, I may have the proper thing for you as well. There we are. So there's your at-need ability, which is Ancient Flex, and then Glitch in the Network is your scene ability. So if you wouldn't mind reading those out real quick.
Ancient Flex, whenever you roll to do something with the network, take two of your dice pool and set them to successes before you roll. Say how your giants ensured those successes. And scene abilities. Glitch in the Network, once per scene, you can exploit a network's resource of difficulty 3 or lower. Ooh, hacking the system.
Yeah, so once per scene, you just get to hack something.
Ugh, that's so cool.
I love it. That's, I can make so many things go wrong.
Right, and just mechanically, if you think about all of these at need and scene and session abilities should be roughly equivalent in power, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not as concerned with balance, but like Glitch in the Network for the Bone Bonded lets you once per scene exploit a network resource of 3 or lower, and Jeff's ability to smuggle an entire group of people through a security system that's 3 or lower is only once per session because it affects multiple people.
Ah. Okay, yeah. I'm seeing the logic here.
Yeah, so that's the rough idea is that the at-need ability is something that is useful, but context dependent. Even Alex's ability to give the extra dice, like you have to be around the character to actually have that work properly.
Mm-hmm.
Or be in communication with them. So there are things that are contingent upon that actually functioning. So yeah, that's what we have. If we find that they don't work or whatever, we'll go from there. And then the last thing to say about these new mechanics is when we detail new NPCs, right? We're going to do it this exact same way we did it before. We're going to name off three details for ease of use. We're going to say that they're just going to be in order, right? They're going to be excellent, good, fair. So 10, 7, and 5 dice. And then should you choose to embody a character, that is when you will flesh them out fully by choosing a warrior clan for them, or if they are of the opposition, or maybe not part of the resistance, we'll find something else to sub in for warrior clan, because it might be interesting to check out the lives of some corporate drones for a scene, right? You know, and know, be on the receiving end of like the good guys busting in. So they may not have a warrior clan. They may have other stuff that sort of subs for that. But what that means is, if you will indulge the game design on the fly bug, we may make people who are clans that we haven't detailed yet, right?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't even detailed the three ways for all the other clans, right? So if we decide that we want to come up, if we make a bear and we're like, okay, well, what are the ways going to be? Just make a way, right? And then we'll make a power for that of each step for those ways. And then we'll put that in the text, and then we'll play test it later and see how it actually runs. But when we expand people, we're going to be expanding the mechanics as we do so.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm all about it. I'm loving this.
I love it.
Great. Okay, so I don't want to spend too much longer on this sort of intro-y bit. Oh, there is one thing to say. So I have formalized how glitch dice work.
Ooh, okay.
So basically, right now, when you are in a situation, you're rolling to oppose somebody and you're going to take some what would be stress or, you know, hit point damage in other systems, or you take success at a cost or choose to fail, I'm going to assign you a number of glitch dice. If it's an opposed roll, it'll be the number of hits they got over you, right? You'll just have glitch dice. And those are dice you just put into their own little pool. And the next time that you would roll, you don't just roll your dice, you roll all the glitch dice as well.
Okay.
That's fun.
And the glitch dice do specific things. Right. Like if you I haven't detailed what all the things are, but if you get, say, if you get three ones on your glitch dice, then that's going to be a specific bad thing that happens.
Okay.
Okay.
If you roll a six on your glitch dice on any of them, they get locked into your glitch track.
Ah, that's how that works.
And every time you get three dice locked, an escalation happens. An escalation is a new detail that ostensibly the narrator comes up with, but we're going to come up with it together, that either directly negatively impacts your character or increases the stakes of the scene that we're in.
That's my favorite. Thank you.
When you get your ninth locked die or your third escalation, you are taken out of the scene.
Cool.
Because of the nature of this game and the fact that you are literally insurrectionists, and because you can spotlight other characters, that means your character can die.
Nice.
Yeah.
Unless contextually it just makes absolutely no sense, right? Basically, you follow the narrative. Whatever, like, the most interesting and also logical conclusion of you being taken out in a, as part of an action is, then that's what happens. And there'll be some alternate rules, because people may not want to do the spotlight character thing. People may just want to play the people that they're playing and and not risk that they're going to lose their character.
Yeah, that's hard sometimes.
So that may change. Actually, on the character sheet, I said a one on a glitch die locks it into your track. So that's what it's going to be. If you roll one on the ones on the glitch dice, that's what will lock it in there.
Okay.
Since I wrote it down, that supersedes what I said verbally. All right. So that is all the new mechanics. That's all the new stuff. We are now raring and ready to go. So when we left off last time, you had all met up at one of the Resistance safe houses to discuss sort of what the plan was going to be in terms of meeting Burnt Umber, right? Verifying, was Burnt Umber a real resource? Did they have good information? And what was it going to look like to meet up with them? You shared some drinks, you shared some camaraderie, the giant like flooded into the electronics of the area and like lit it up a few times. You all determined that you're going to go meet Burnt Umber the next day in the Twitch as directed. How's the rest of the evening play out?
I think for at least a little while, Aki tries to share stories about all the catastrophic failures
infrastructure failures that have happened here. Like, do y'all remember that time when the plumbing down on South Street exploded and there was just sewage water for weeks? Couldn't go near that place. It smelled so bad.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember. I mean, well, and you know, thankfully, you know, somebody happened to find a bunch of extra pipe that had been left over from construction gig. Whoever that person was a real, that was a real lucky find, and I'm really happy that it just happened to be lying there.
Everyone was grateful.
It's a good kind of person to have around.
You know, whoever they were, I feel the same way. I envision it as a lot of hanging out into the night, because I think that's kind of Ronnie's MO, mm-hmm. I feel like these three characters in particular are all people that like value like a connection to the point where when we find one, like we're going to savor that as long as it can last.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Alex or B, if you feel differently, but like that's the vibe I get here, like with the interactions that these three characters have had going like previously.
That feels valid.
Yeah, I'm definitely like, if these other two characters are hanging out, I'm not going to be the one to be like, okay, well, it's been fun, but later. Like, bye. But I don't see that happening. Yeah, I think this is definitely like, we're here for the rest of the night. At least that's what I had assumed, sort of. I mean, especially since we went out of our way to describe this place as like a potential bunking spot. I think that just feels like probably what we do.
I probably take the boat out a little bit on the water. Like, not like terribly far, but like just enough to show off that I know how to drive the boat.
Oh, I didn't think this actually moved. Also, I call dibs on the only bed.
It probably shouldn't, honestly, but here we go.
Oh, no.
I want to suggest that in the water, one of the things that just is true about the world now is that there are all sorts of, like, schools of weird, like, they're like nanobot plankton,
mm-hmm.
and they glow. Ooh. So there's like barnacles and plankton and things that are like bioluminescent, but not naturally. It's like a cybernetic thing.
Yeah, and every so often, if you like, it's later in the evening, say the boat's docked again, and you're like sitting up on top of it and like looking out over the water. Every so often, the nanobot plankton will like briefly form into like a corporate sponsorship message.
Try Odin Sleep, the most trusted sleep aid in the internet.
Because all the godly corporations are trying to figure out how to use this cast-off resource of their absolute capitalistic depravity, but they can't get it to happen all the time. So you'll see like slightly garbled, you know, messages about like sexual enhancement pills or, you know, life insurance or whatever it is. And then of course there are local people who have like every year there's a celebration where someone makes like a technological device. It's like, okay, this is one use. The timing's got to be just right. And everyone gets to the right vantage point and you toss it down into the water and the message it sends out, it like gets all the plankton to like basically do a fireworks show.
Yeah. I was going to say, probably one of the first, like, rites of passage for, like, a young rascal hacker coming of age is learning how to, like, change the color of the plankton or something.
Yeah.
That's really good.
I love that.
That's really good.
I imagine Ronnie, like, has a small pile of stones next to him, and as every time one of these sponsor logos pops up, she grabs a rock and just whips it.
Unlock your full beauty potential with new Freya's gift.
Whips it right at this logo. It's just like, nope. Not tonight.
Not tonight. Not on this of all nights.
Mm-mm.
Local plankton hate him.
This one weird trick for disrupting corporate sponsorships. Click here to find out more.
Yes.
So, quick out-of-game moment. This, if we had not just spent all of that time like adapting these characters, this feels like one of those moments where I should, as the narrator, ask, do you want to switch to another group of focus characters? Now, the answer can be no. That's fine, obviously. But it occurs to me that absent our playtesting setup to get to this point, like having that sort of like companionable long into the night, if this were a movie or a TV show, the camera would probably cut to something else.
Uh-huh. Burnt Umber.
So I'm going to ask the question. Do you want to switch to another set of focus characters? What that would mean is picking from one of the two NPCs that we have already and then detailing two others to dive in there, or making three, like if it was the night that, you know, the coming of age for a young hacker is happening 100 yards down the beach, then it could be that. Just tossing it out there because the moment felt appropriate.
It is a really cool moment, and it is a super cool jumping off point. If this were anything other than a playtest, I would be all in immediately. I'd be like, hell yeah, let's absolutely do it, because it feels like a very organic moment to do it. But I could go either way. I'm happy to like jump off and do some new characters if we want to set up something cool and different, or even just like lay some groundwork that we can play with later. Like even if we're fully intending to come back to these characters now, just sort of set up some threads elsewhere. Or if we want to just stick with these characters, I'm also happy to do that.
I think I'm in the same boat. If we want to stick with these characters, we can. But I also think it's a really cool opportunity for us to just try out the thing and kind of like you had mentioned, like game design and playtesting on the fly. Like if like this seems like an opportunity to do that. So I'm all about doing it unless we feel real, unless B or Tracy, you feel strongly about sticking with these characters.
I would like to play Bert Umbra's assistant who has knives for legs. Sword legs.
That rules.
All right.
You know what actually just occurred to me is like thinking about this. I know I initially said literally 2 minutes ago that like if this were not a playtest, I'd be all in. But I'm kind of coming around on it. And I think that maybe because it's a playtest, we almost have to. Like, because if we're going to find out that we don't like this mechanic at all, like this would be the time.
This is the moment to do it.
We shouldn't make you go like 10 more rounds down. Like revisions of trying to create this mechanic and get it to work if it just turns out we actually don't like it.
Slide 10 is now Burnt Umbra's crew.
I'm so here for this. Thank you.
And what we can do here, obviously, there are only three players. In theory, I can take on, because the narrator role with this much collaboration gets a little fuzzier, right? Because if I want to spotlight a character, then I jump into whomever I want to as the narrator. But if we want to just play out a scene with four people in it, we can do that too. So I would just start putting in some names for people and then pick some people we want to detail more than that. And then we'll just go from there. So we have created the following characters. We have Knifesbloth. We have Weedmom 420. We have Doc in the Bay, which is DOC.
Okay.
8855-8855-88. We have Roy, Cerulean Echo 19, Swan Song, Encrypted Message, and Talia by Xbox.
Great crew.
Really strong.
Oh my god, Umber, what kind of people do you hang out with?
Now here is the one thing that we know is that we are on, like, the characters that we've already met are on that crew, so nothing about this should be surprising.
Yeah.
I'm just upset with the character whose predominant detail is knives for legs. That's awesome.
Their third detail is a bit of a pun. It's the baby pun. Cats have 9 knives.
Oh my god. That's really good.
All right, my work here is done. Goodbye.
Which of these characters do I want to fill in details for?
Yeah, I think that's the important thing, right? Is that I'm going to make this note, because there should be an order of operations for making new characters and the level of like investment you want to have in them, which leads toward embodiment.
Flowchart.
So names first and foremost, then pick a character to detail. And then choose embodiment. There's your order of operations. So it's obvious that B wants to embody Knifesblad.
Mm-hmm. Please.
Which is fantastic. Is there anyone else that speaks to you all about who to embody in this moment?
I put the name in as a complete joke, and I fought the impulse to embody the character. I was like, I want to embody any of these other characters. But I'm gonna be honest, the more I think about Roy, the clearer a picture I have.
You're all in on Roy, aren't you?
I'm all in on Roy.
I'm
all in on Roy.
Roy. I feel like, how did Roy even get into this organization?
I really want to find out, so I'm so glad that you're being Roy.
I'm very committed to Roy.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna take Swan Song, although 8855-8855-88 is really compelling to me.
Very good.
I feel like there's a story there, and I do want to know it, but not from the inside.
yo, what the fuck, Roy?
I feel it. I'm going with it.
Oh, that's amazing.
Wow, Roy is heavy.
I've decided this is Roy. This is the Roy that we know. And we're gonna get to know this Roy.
I'm really curious about Roy.
I have a really clear picture of Roy in my head now, and I'm very
excited.
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, let's go through in detail who these people have become, and then we'll determine the context within which the scene is happening, and then we'll just play it out and see what happens.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
So I'm gonna leave Roy for last, because I think that we've teased whatever the hell is going on with Roy. Why don't we start with Swan Song?
Yeah, let's do it. So my first detail is a voice that commands attention. I kind of have this immediate image in my head of Swan Song as being like the revolutionary equivalent of like a famous radio DJ. I think that like for whatever Burnt Umber is in terms of like a person that you never see and never meet until like Burnt Umber wants to meet you, I think that Swan Song is like the voice that everybody in the revolution knows. I think that like if you've received any sort of message on any sort of coded radio line, like this is the voice you hear.
Nice.
For detail 2, I have any story worth telling is worth embellishing along the way. And for detail 3, I have eyes you could get lost in and always regret it.
Very, very good. Very good.
Yeah. Cool. I detailed Doc in the Bay. My first detail is no blood, no foul.
Mm-hmm.
Second is generally unafraid. And the last is I'd rather have a bottle in front of me, etc., etc. Because I personally don't like the way that phrase ends, but yep. You get the idea.
Yep. All right, I guess that leads to me. So I'm understanding that the O with the little like double hat on it, that's a TH sound?
Yeah, TH or a D, like in the Old Norse spelling of Odin's name.
Mm-hmm.
That character is in there, so it's actually Othin.
Oh, very cool.
But that sound really can get compressed into a D really easily linguistically, and so it's been transliterated as a D into English.
Okay. I think that Nifsblath sounds cooler than Nifsblad. Oh, I get it. Like a blade. Huh. Okay. Anywho, detail 1, knives for feet. Metal legs. Detail 2, dances dangerously well. And final detail, cats have 9 knives.
So I guess it's time to meet Roy.
It's time to meet Roy.
Please, Roy.
Everybody, meet Roy.
Roy's first detail is, I've seen things you wouldn't believe. I've put the ellipses on that, and I am using that as directly a reference to Blade Runner as I can. I picture Roy has, not necessarily in the, I picture it more in the quite literal sense of, like, Roy has seen, like, actual things, more or less so than in, like, a sort of combat sense. That is an important thing to clarify with what's coming. Detail 2 is, no detail is too important not to lie about. And detail 3 is blood will run in the streets. I think that this is a character that has seen the world, like has seen an impossible amount of it, has concocted a persona alongside in the name, naming yourself Roy alongside XX Burnt Umber, XX Niceblad, and Swan Song and Doc in the Bay. Felt like a move by someone that like has escalated things to the highest degree, and so that is where I think Blood in the Streets come from, is like, if I'm doing this, this is going to be, like, this is not going to be, like, a quiet, clean thing. This is going to be, like, a complete obliteration of our enemies. So that's Roy!
Nice!
That's Roy!
Boy, invite him to your bar mitzvahs, kids.
You can't afford not to.
That's frankly, very true.
Are you gonna tell Roy that he's not invited?
What's the context for this gathering? I feel like since we just had like this in-person gathering with the others, and since there are people in this group who are potentially prominent and don't want to be compromised, like I'm thinking of Swan Song, and obviously Burnt Umber mm-hmm. keeps a low profile. What if we made this a virtual meeting?
We're in the Digiforums, baby.
Yeah. so like it's like
Spy Kids 3D Game Over.
Yes. And also a scenic complement and contrast to the scene we just left, right? Like We're in the softly blue glowing houseboat. It's rocking gently as waves sort of lap, and everyone inside is kind of falling asleep, and the panels dim, and as the light comes back up, it's a slightly different shade of blue, just enough so you know it's not like the soft light that the giant was putting into the panels, but like a much more neon. Yeah, I'm thinking now very much like bisexual lighting, right? It's blue, and then pink comes in from the side, and that's sort of the backdrop of this virtual space that we're meeting in, because of course we don't have to do this via text. We can meet online in our digital avatars, baby.
Mm-hmm. I have a question, actually, and this is a thought.
Yes, please.
I know that we haven't really fleshed out any of the other settings or gods or what have you.
Yeah.
But I know that there is, you know, obviously with like this big corporate metaphor that we're working with, there is like obviously sort of the idea of a den of debauchery and like a god and a force that controls and weaponizes like that sort of indulgence and decadence and like that lifestyle. What if, and if this is too whack, like I'm totally fine with it, but like I'm kind of obsessed with the idea of like, what if we're meeting in like Iron at a Second Life?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's some seedy back room in a virtual club somewhere that like for whatever reason is like so dysregulated and so overrun with a bunch of people doing whatever nonsense that like it actually becomes the safest place to have a meeting like this.
That's very cool. That's very, very cool.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So looking through the list of the gods, that would be Freyr and Freya.
Yeah.
The Laird of Passion. Their portfolio is sex and sensuality. So I think that the lighting resolves itself into, like I said, that blue and that pink, that sort of kind of like the colors in the logo, right? That kind of clash off of each other. What's the official name of this club?
It's got to be cheesy.
It's got to be so over the top. Like, and it's got to look so... the last place in the world you would expect to find an important revolutionary meeting.
Can we call it Thor's hammer with like moving neon?
Yes, that absolutely.
That definitely implies a penis.
Yes. Perfect.
I've got to add the detail that the hammer is held in a, if we're going for peak iconography, it's got to be held in like a bicep, right? Like a peak, like flexing.
Oh yeah. 100%.
If we're going over the top cheese, like that's what it's got to be.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So meeting in a seedy back room in Thor's hammer. Now, I think so. Is this all happening in a real space or a digital space?
No, this is a digital space.
Yeah, this is all digital.
Oh, for sure. Ugh, meeting in real life? No.
Okay, fantastic. So you see that emblem and that logo, and then there's like a little flicker and a glitch that tells the audience watching that this is a digital creation. And the camera zooms in through this club, and all manner of debauchery is happening, lit exclusively in this blue and this pink. The outfits that everyone's wearing, it's just these colors clashing and clashing and clashing and clashing. All manner of activity is happening. These digital avatars are experiencing every bit of pleasure they want to. Who knows what that actually does for your mind? We don't know. It's a Norse fantasy matrix thing. We don't know. And then the camera cuts to just someone sort of hanging out and leaning against a wall and kind of like with the posture of, it's kind of like a seedy, creepy posture of a person who's at an orgy and just watching. But that person who's hanging out with that posture is 8855-8855-88.
Feels right.
Yep.
Sort of just looks around, and then there's bare wall on either side of them, and then just subtly pounds on the wall twice, and there's a little digital flicker, like a shimmer, to indicate a door, and it's almost like 8855-8855-88 is letting the camera in to this back room.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool.
What does the back room look like?
Disco ball. I need a disco ball.
I think this is a space that, like, I think the level of unobtrusive that we've been able to achieve here, I want to propose that this is quite literally there are no textures, no surfaces. The only it is like a for lack of a better way to put it, like think like a black box theater where it's just like black walls, black floor, black. It is just like it is just blank texture with a disco ball hanging down that someone has added in, has insisted be hanging down.
I love that.
I love that strong Matrix vibes. You know,
it's really good.
Yeah, I think as the meeting is about to begin, other like virtual like back doors open up into the room, mm-hmm. and you get like a hint of the space that was behind each person as they come in. Doc and the Bay shuts the door behind themselves, and you get just a glimpse of a very like Cheers-esque contemporary comfortable bar. And Doc just sort of walks in, first one there, looks up at the disco ball and kind of squints their eyes a little bit, and then like reaches over to the wrist and types something on a keypad. Probably unnecessary in the space, but this is like the mnemonic that they use to activate things.
Mm-hmm.
And a wireframe Barca lounger appears, like a big recliner, nice. Overstuffed recliner. And Doc just sort of sits in it and then like goes to plop and like really relax. And then just sort of stops. Ugh, no textured wireframe piece of... And I think the next door opens as Doc is about to expletive in the private space.
You know, they have in-game currency for that.
Love to listen to you talk. Hate your attitude.
You know, I get that a lot.
And yet nothing changes.
Oh, why does she ever? I'm sure there's some grand idea and some extremely specific manner in which it needs to be carried out.
Well, she only calls us in when... something is actually happening, so there's at least that. Could have been home drinking.
Another door opens, and you kind of get a glittering view as that disco ball catches some of the light from the other side of this digital doorway. And it's nothing but knives and daggers and swords along the wall, in a very bare room beyond that kind of wall decorating, and on top of the hardwood floor is a grinder and a grinding belt. And stepping through that doorway, dressed kind of in like Victorian, the puffy neck bits, but instead of a dress, it's like poofy legs that kind of go to the knees, and from the knees it's bare down because it's just knives that she kind of walks point tip on.
That rolls so hard.
Ah, I see I'm not late this time. Where is Roy?
The second you say, where is Roy, a weird thing kind of happens where, like, shapes start to materialize a little bit. And, like, even in this room where it's all, like, black and it's just, like, the surfaces with the disco ball, like, you're all still kind of washed over with that sort of, like, pink and blue lighting. But, like, Roy appears sitting, like, leaning against a wall, drinking a cup of coffee, and is lit very differently. It's lit as though Roy is in a physical space.
Ooh.
And what appears around you is several dead bodies. And, like, it is clear that what is being displayed here is not, like, Roy's typical digital ego. Like, this is clearly, like, a broadcast of a scene that Roy has decided, like, you need to see, because this is the important thing that has brought us together, is, like, something very tense, something very aggressive, something very, like, scary. Whether it is unexpected or expected only to Burnt Umber or, like, expected to everyone, like, this is clearly, like, a jarring thing that happens that Roy could not be calmer as he sips his coffee and is like, oh, I'm here. I had some business to take care of.
Iron Edda Reforged is a production of the One Shot Podcast Network in conjunction with the Other Dev Productions, written and designed by Tracy Barnett, performed by Alex Flanagan, B. Zelda, and Jeff Storm. Edited by Jupiter Aquas. Hello, Rebels. Just a quick note here at the end of this episode to thank everybody who took the time and the effort and the resources to back the Kickstarter for Iron Edda Reforged Season 1. It funded successfully just a few days ago, and that means this entire season gets to be produced without me having to pay my performers out of pocket. They were going to get paid no matter what, but now it's covered. It's fantastic, and I'm very, very happy about that. So, you can look forward to more episodes of this on this feed. You can look forward to the video actual play series that also, the audio will
appear on this feed eventually, and you can look forward to the game. Thank you all very, very much. It's greatly appreciated. If you enjoyed this show, you should check out some other shows on the One Shot Podcast Network. Shows like Design Doc. Join hosts Hannah Schaefer and Evan Rowland as they redesign their first role-playing game, Questlandia. Design Doc is an experiment in public participatory analog game design. It's fun, it's messy, and you're invited along for the ride.